It's Thursday, March 16th, 2006. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Manhattan, Kansas. Good afternoon, and welcome to the second International Skype Cast, which I guess we haven't officially christened with a name, but we've toyed with some ideas like Over the Pond and Through the Fiber. Today we had a Skype cast that involved educators from around the world. Miguel Goulin from San Antonio joined us, Darren Kerpatois from Winnipeg, Canada. We had Ewan McIntosh from Edinburgh, Scotland, and then we had two guests, Mark Alness, a third grade teacher in Seattle, Washington, and we were also joined by Jeff Allen, who works at an educational service unit or service center in Bremerton, Washington. The topic that we took up today was really one that originated with David Warlick talking about telling the new story, and I'll include in the podcast show notes a link to David's post, and you'll hear each of us, I think, kind of put in our own context and words what we think that new story is. But Darren summarized it pretty well in talking about the relationships and the connections that are facilitated by the Read-Write Web, and Jeff talking about the things that will amplify effective practices. So without further ado, here is the Skype cast, and if you have any feedback, I would welcome your comments here, or you're certainly encouraged to email or contact any of the participants whose links I will also include in the show notes. Good afternoon from Manhattan, Kansas. This is Wes Fryer, and I am on the Skype line with four other educators from around the country and the world. We've got Ewan McIntosh, who is in Edinburgh, Scotland, and we've got Mark Alness, who's in Seattle, Washington. We've got Darren Kerpatois, who is in Winnipeg, Canada, and we have Miguel Goulin in San Antonio, Texas. And so our topic today actually is up for a little debate, and we've invited everyone to kind of clarify their interpretation of it. But the way that Miguel phrased this originally was that David Warlick talks about telling a new story, and how can we define what that means? Is our future of what we need to be doing in education with regard to Web 2.0 technologies that we've talked about before, but that could be digital storytelling, blogging, podcasting, wikis, an amalgamation of new untried solutions, or something different, and how can these fundamentally transform teaching, learning, and leadership aside from serving as a big distraction? So I'll chime in a little bit later, but let's turn it over to Miguel to introduce himself briefly, tell him how he reads this, and then give us an answer.
Hi, this is Miguel Goulin. When I was thinking about this question, is the new future just an amalgamation of new untried solutions? I was really reflecting on all these wonderful things that people are doing. For example, the digital storytelling, the blogging, the podcasting, and wikis. And from the perspective of a classroom teacher or an administrator who may not have been thinking about this, this is just a distraction. It really pulls us aside from the work that we're really here about. And I wonder if that perspective, and I know this isn't necessarily new, but that schools are becoming irrelevant because society is moving on. I was doing some reading recently, and I ran across a principal's academy, and they brought kids in, and they asked them, what were some of your most rewarding experiences over the last few years? And the principals were expecting, we really enjoyed this teacher and some of the things that we learned. Instead, kids said the school was boring, and that they talked about things that they had learned outside of school, horseback riding, learning to drive a car, etc. I wonder if that's changed a little bit now, and we're now looking at kids talking about what they're doing in MySpace and how they're connecting with others. So that's sort of the context or the background for asking the question about how do these fundamentally transform teaching and learning. Looking at defining the question, untried innovative solutions. Well, when we talk about untried, what do we mean by that? Does untried mean that they haven't been tested in schools? For example, look at the work that Darren has done, Clarence Fisher, Bob Sprankle, Tony Vincent. All of these folks have done wonderful things with kids using these different technologies and approaches, these solutions. But they're still untried, they're untested, because they don't connect with the traditional environment of schools. So one of the other things, and then I'll just be quiet, I was reading again and ran across this quote about something that Vince Carr shared in regards to communication technologies. And he wasn't talking about blogs. He was talking about more traditional things like email. And he said that there have to be three factors in place for the mass of users, really mainstream teachers, to adopt technology. He said that the critical mass of adopters needed to convince mainstream teachers of technology's efficacy. That means the critical mass of adopters. I think that critical mass is not in schools. I think that critical mass is outside of schools. I'll leave the other two factors for later for discussion, but I'm wondering if change is not something that's going to come from within our schools, but really is something that has to come from society, because our schools reflect society and mainstream culture. And they will only become... we will only fundamentally transform teaching, learning, and leadership when schools bow to society's demands and pressures. Thank you.
Well, if I can just kind of summarize a little bit, and then we'll turn it over to Darren. It sounds like Miguel is sort of questioning, you know, the connection between all of these Web 2.0 tools and these exciting technologies, you know, to the real classroom. And, of course, one of the great things about our conference today is we have classroom teachers here in North America and those involved in teacher education. So Darren is one who's been doing a lot with blogging, and we'll turn it over to him to tell us a little bit about himself, kind of how he reads the question and what his answer is.
Okay. Thanks, Wes. This is Darren. I'm the department head of mathematics at Daniel McIntyre High School in Winnipeg, Manitoba, right in the middle of Canada. And I've been reading David Warlick's work for a while, and his post where he talks about the new story, I've been looking at it and preparing for today's conversation, and it seems to me that he pulls a couple of quotes out of Friedman's book, and I couldn't quite put my finger on what he means by telling the new story. I definitely agree so far as stories is a really powerful way to educate. By using concrete examples. I know I tend to think more concretely, less abstract. I know I find that in the classroom with my students that if I tell them a story about some concrete event and then relate it to the abstract mathematics that they're learning, they get it much better. I'm wondering if that's the kind of story that he's talking about, and if the story in particular that he's looking at is some of the things that Miguel and Wes, you've alluded to, which is the practice of some teachers that are, I guess, getting on the bandwagon of using the Web 2.0 technologies like blogs and wikis and social bookmarking and all the other things surrounding that. Miguel was saying something about the critical mass of adopters. Do we get to a point where enough people have adopted using this technology in their day-to-day teaching practice so that it does become... a matter of course, or more of a commonplace way of teaching and learning. I think I'm rambling a little bit, and that's mostly
right.
Because I still don't really have my head around what the question is.
Well, Darren, let me
I would sum it up. I would sum it up just by saying that I think what's being asked is, what is the impact of flat world technologies on teaching and learning? We've seen some of the impact that it's beginning to have in the areas of business. When Friedman talks about outsourcing and insourcing and supply chaining, education typically is slow to follow. So the question is, what is the impact that that's going to have on teaching and learning, and what are the stories that are coming out of education in this early phase as we begin to adopt using these technologies in our practice? I don't know if I've got that right, but that's what I think is being asked.
Okay, well, good. Well, I've got some follow-up questions to go on there. Some feedback there in the background. Okay, let's go on now. Well, let's turn it over to Mark. Mark, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit, and how do you read this? Because I know you've been doing a lot with blogging, and what's your view from Seattle in the third grade classroom?
This is Mark. It's great to be here. That feedback you just heard was a bell at my school. I'm a third grade teacher at Arbor Heights Elementary School, and that was one of the recess bells. not the one that I have to answer to quite yet. I have a few minutes to be with you guys, and this is terrific. Yes, Wes just mentioned that I've been doing some blogging with my kids, and as Darren mentioned, you know, I had a hard time understanding the question that David asked as well, but Darren, as he was speaking, kind of helped me understand and come up with something that makes sense to me when he asked about, you know, how does the flat world that Friedman writes about, how does that make a difference to technology, to education, to the influence of technology on education, and how they work together? And I don't think it's happened yet. I think that what we're doing right now is definitely a world flattener sort of thing. And I've thought about, well, it's a big frustration. I'm sitting here. There are not, you know, I don't know of any other blogging teachers here in Seattle. This has been going on for a long time, and why isn't it spreading faster? Why are some of us just so wound up and excited and blown away by this and are as our kids? And then, but why is it not spreading faster, I guess? And I guess when we think about the flat world, Dave Warlick asked a question, I don't think it was on this particular posting, but about making a bold new step or two, proposing something different. David described, how about a 3 or 4 hour prep period for teachers? Wouldn't that make a difference in education? So to bring that, the idea of a bold step back into how does a flat world technology and education go together, I would suggest that perhaps the way the world blogging and RSS and all this stuff is spreading within the education community is following an old model. And that old model is top-down, spread the word out, funnel it out. I'm trying to think of an example. I guess one of the examples would be conferences. Regional conferences. Teachers come, they hear several speakers, they go back, and the people who come to those conferences are often trainers of teachers, and then they have to go back and train the teachers, yada, yada, and so on. But we don't really need to do that anymore. The world is flat, indeed. If we could figure out how to use those tools to connect directly with teachers. I know I'm being very naive, probably, but somehow out there, it's just around the corner, I'm sure. I'm rambling, and I better turn it over to somebody else.
Okay.
At this point.
That is excellent, and let me chime in with a couple thoughts, and then we'll get Ewan's perspective. I'm reminded of a story that was just told today. I'm here in Manhattan, Kansas, actually with my family, visiting my parents, and we heard the school superintendent here in Manhattan, Kansas, talk to the local Rotary Club today, and he told a story about a researcher here in Manhattan that's been doing research about light pollution and using a telescope and all this. Well, it turns out it's Gavin, his next-door neighbor, who's 6 years old and is so excited about learning about science and learning about space. And the other part of this conversation was about high-stakes testing and accountability. And the way that I read this question is similar to what Darren and Mark have said already, that we need to think about how we are trying to tell a story to others about what teaching and learning really should be about and what it is about, and, you know, utilize these technologies to tell that story. And what Miguel talked about as far as a critical mass, you know, I guess I see the kids as ready today. I think if we think about one-to-one technology immersion, you know, kids were ready yesterday to have a more immersed and technologically infused educational experience and to be more engaged with learning. But, you know, one of the big questions is how we get the teachers who are the digital immigrants ready and prepared. So, you know, I think the questions that Darren has raised about what's the impact of the flat world on education, you know, what Mark has asked about why has it not happened yet, and, you know, Miguel's question about how are we going to get this critical mass of adopters to do it. I think David is alluding to the answer, because the answer is storytelling, and, you know, that needs to be part of what we center ourselves around, is telling that story when we have successes. That's one of the reasons I'm so excited to have a chance to connect with, you know, educators like you guys who are doing great things and, you know, wanting to share that with other people, because you know, like Mark said, there's not, you know, there aren't hundreds of bloggers in Seattle. There are not hundreds of teacher bloggers in Lubbock, Texas, where I live either. But the fact that we have the communication tools of the web and you know, the read-write web, it means that we can connect in positive ways to support each other, to share ideas, but also tell our story. So that's a little of my take. Ewan, you've heard four other perspectives, so we'll turn it over to you now.
Well, I'm the very lucky one because I get to kind of have everyone else's arguments to prop up my own. I hope you don't. By the way, I hope as well that I'm a lot more coherent than I am at 4:30 in the morning. So I'm going to go through, and I hope it doesn't come across that I'm taking people's arguments to bits, but it's there's some really interesting things in that people have said, and you're all in the middle of a busy day at school or in wherever you work, and I've had several, you know, 30 minutes or so to reflect about it. Miguel talked about kids using things like Bebo and MySpace and MSN Spaces, and in the last few weeks I've been getting really into working out what makes these tick as businesses, because that's what they are at the end of the day for the people who run them. They're not communities in the same way that Warlick's Blogmeister might be or some of the open source stuff might be. Now, I've been working in a school, Queensferry High School in Edinburgh, on blogging, and every kid just got their own blog. But the first lesson we did, I hadn't met the class before, didn't know anything about them, and so we played at commenting, and I was really taken aback at how do you get this across, at how blatant the kids were when they were sending comments. They were sending rude comments, comments that weren't anything to do with the lesson, and this was despite them making up their own rules about what was reasonable. So I realised that they were using these tools. All of them had a MySpace or a Bebo account, but they were so used to the anonymity that these tools offered, relative anonymity, that they got used to using it in a particular way. Now, Wes just latterly has talked about digital immigrants, referring, I presume, to people over the age of, what would you say, Wes?
Well, I don't know, probably late 30s, 40s, maybe.
Okay, you look very young for your photograph then. I'm not so sure about the age of digital immigrants, because I'm 28, just turned 28, and I'm working with a journalist from BBC Radio 4 at the moment, and the journalist is younger than me, and she didn't know anything that I was talking about. She didn't know of the existence of MySpace or Bebo, and this is someone who's tapped into youth culture being a radio reporter for the BBC. Now, if she doesn't know it, I thought, well, I'm going to go and ask the kids how they use these tools. And they might be able to do the mouse clicking, but in my opinion, they are digital immigrants still, because they don't understand how to use these tools in a constructive way that's going to stand them well in the long term. And that's because they're kids. And that's because kids need shown sometimes the way to go. And then they can fly, they can find their wings and fly away. So that was my first point. The second point is in relation to the, again, Miguel's idea. Sorry, Miguel, I'm picking on you tonight. Miguel's first statement was that schools were risking becoming irrelevant, and I believed that up until a very short time ago when I read the Naked Conversations from Robert Scoble at Microsoft and Shell Israel, who's a big PR guy, helped launch PowerPoint. Obviously, a good marketeer, being able to market a crap product like that. But what these two guys have said is that businesses, in fact, having trouble getting what we are having trouble getting our colleagues to understand. Lots of business, the majority of business, still thinks of blogging as a distraction, as something which maybe doesn't suit them. And even today on the Naked Conversations blog, which I advise subscribing to just from a curiosity point of view, Shell is talking about how people are telling him he needs to shout louder to get more businesses to take things up, to take blogs, podcasts, wikis, take them up in their business. Now, this all sounds far too familiar to edubloggers like us. So whether schools are irrelevant or not, I'm not so sure. I think we're maybe on the same level and we're doing ourselves down. But that also gives the opportunity for education to fire ahead of some of the business world that we often seem to lag behind. And the idea that what we're doing is untried and untested because it doesn't connect with what is traditionally done in classrooms is the moment where I think we have to stop worrying so much about numbers of people doing this and start creating a new tradition, if you like, When you look at what blogging is about, I'm going to pick blogging because it's something that the majority of listeners to this will get. When you look at blogging, what are you looking at? Well, if I say the words assessment is for learning, and you understand what that means, then you will understand what a blog is for. If you haven't got a clue what formative assessment is about, then there's no way you're going to get blogging. Now, a lot of educators still use summative assessment far too much. From what I understand from you guys and the post that you write, the American system is absolutely full of summative assessment from a very early age. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know what it's like in Canada. I was slightly more impressed when I went to New Brunswick and saw what they were doing there. It's full of formative assessment, and these guys get it. So the technology, and I always come back to this old mantra that I've taken up and now haunts me wherever I go. It's not about the tech. It's not about all the tools. It is about the teacher. It is about the way people teach. And I think there might be more mileage in getting educators to understand themes like assessment is for learning before we try and convince them that tools like blogging are going to be worthwhile for them. Because without the first thing, blogging isn't going to really take off in any great sense, and neither will podcasts, neither will wiki use. And my final point relates to David Warlick's slightly annoying phrase, new story. And it's annoying because it's so difficult to understand. It's verging on jargon if we don't understand what it means. Now, storytelling is a great way to teach kids and to share an experience and to get people to understand what you're saying. And Wes knows all about that, working in digital storytelling. When you see the motivation that you get from kids who actually make up their own stories in that particular high-tech kind of way. But when you look at outsourcing that's taking place in industry at the moment, and you look at what countries like the USA and Scotland and Canada need to do, what we need to do is be more creative and work out ways of manipulating knowledge to turn it into information that countries who are into processing cannot process. So we have to be one step ahead of the game in terms of being very creative with our knowledge. At the moment, if I'm looking for someone to process my statistics, then I will ask colleagues in India to do that. If I want a call centre, I'll ask colleagues in Bangladesh to be a call centre because it's cheaper. However, analysing that data is now also happening in countries like India and Bangladesh. So we've got to try and get one step ahead and find new creative markets in which we can work. And I think there's a big role for things like podcasting, creating media objects like digital stories, creating podcasts, in giving our kids the media edge that children elsewhere on the planet aren't able to have. And to do that, we need to, I'm not sure critical mass is essential. I think what we need to find are key user groups, teachers who agree already with kind of what we're saying, turn those key users into people who know how to use the tools, and then enthuse these key users so much that they turn into evangelists. And it's not top down. It doesn't, you know, conferences do work to some extent, but it's also flattening that and getting the people at the bottom, as it were, to evangelize for us and to help spread the word about these tools and why they're useful. There's a lot in there, though. Sorry.
No, that's great. Well, let me go ahead and give Mark an opportunity. He's going to have to pick up his kids from recess, and then maybe we can just open it up. We'd like to ask each other questions. But, Mark, do you want to chime in with either a response or a question?
Sure. Yeah, thank you. This is just fascinating, guys. Thanks for letting me take part in this. First of all, I got to say that before I forget. How to get the word out. I've been teaching third grade for 15 years now, and I've not seen anything more powerful come along in terms of motivating students ever than blogging in terms of writing, okay? There's just nothing more powerful. And I'm sitting here wanting to shout this from the rooftops, but, you know, where is the rooftop where everybody gets to hear, you know, me shout from? I really think in terms of getting teachers to buy into this, to pick up the new tools, to become bloggers, to have their kids blog, just choosing one of Web 2.0's things, teachers have to embrace it themselves. They have to learn how to blog themselves first. You know, I don't think, you know, I've been to workshops where you show this is the best thing, you won't believe what this will do to transform your classroom. And it might not just be about blogging, but it might be about any old thing. And if it's like, if it is like way out there and way beyond the ability of the teacher or the teachers in that group, it's like the biggest surefire turnoff you can imagine. Because teachers will sit in that group or that training room or whatever and say to themselves, there is no way I'm ever going to do this. There's no way I'm able or capable to do that. So I believe we have to recruit teachers to become bloggers as individuals first. If they buy into the technology, then they will for sure want to pass it on.
I agree entirely with what you're saying there, because it's the... if you go to one of these conferences or hear someone enthusiastic, unless you sit down there and then and make up your own personal blog and write maybe one or two or three posts there and then, you do walk away at the end of it and you never read the handout, do you?
Right. You have to gain confidence. You have to know that you can do it. You have to understand how it works. Anyway, it's... Oh, what else did I want to say? The bell is ticking. The clock is ticking closer to bell time. I'm gonna just close with a thank you and thanks to David Warlick for Class Blogmeister. And just a short story. I've had Wesley, you know, in making the connection for this. I have 15 classroom computers, and my kids were all writing and doing things, and all of a sudden someone comes up. Or runs across, Mr. Allness, Wesley Fryer's on the computer. And so that student was actually a student that you talked about in your one of those podcasts from one of your conferences. So these kids are just, they're just going with this tool. And I hope that you guys can help get some good handles on how to spread this out there to other teachers and get them in on this great story. So thanks again for letting me take part.
Well, hey, thank you for joining us, Mark, and we'll hopefully look forward to continuing the conversation.
Thanks.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you, Mark. It was a real pleasure having you with us.
Thank you.
Likewise.
We've just been joined by Jeff Allen, who is in Bremerton, Washington, and we'll invite Miguel maybe to summarize a little bit our conversation. We've been talking for about 30 minutes and had a lot of good discussion around this idea of David Warlick's challenge to tell a new story. So, Miguel, since you started us off, why don't you summarize a little bit and then respond a little bit. Whenever Jeff is ready, we'll have him chime in.
Jeff, we've been talking about or trying to understand what David Warlick means by telling a new story. We think we need a new story because blogging, podcasting, and wikis don't seem to be fitting in. Mark said that he thinks he might be the only blogger in Seattle, Washington. Perhaps this podcast will help get the word out about his efforts. But it seems that we don't have a mass of people jumping into blogging and podcasting and things like that. So how, if we don't have that critical mass, how are we going to really transform teaching, learning, and leadership? All of this still seems like a big distraction. And this is dangerous because if the world is really flat, then our kids aren't going to be ready, et cetera, et cetera. So that was a terrible summary. I don't excel at summaries.
Well,
so.
let me add a little bit to that perhaps, and we'll let others chime in. But it occurs to me that the impetus for change in business is so much different than it is in education. I mean, when you read what Friedman talks about in The World is Flat, outsourcing and offshoring and all these things are happening because there's a bottom line companies are chasing and there's a strong impetus for efficiency and change. And we don't have that same kind of impetus for change in educational environments and educational structures. So I think part of what we're talking about here is, you know, what should our individual roles be in this? If we're going to be telling this story, you know, how do we do it? And how do we let other people know about how these things can be utilized in real powerful, constructive ways? And Ewan's points that he made, which Jeff wasn't here to catch, but, you know, he was saying how it's really not about the technology. It's really about the teaching and learning, getting people to understand the importance of a formative assessment, getting people to understand how, you know, the teaching needs to change from just a transmission-based model to a real interactive model, and how much room there is for education. I'm going to go up to Kansas State tomorrow and talk with with a gentleman who has just done, Mike Ribble, a bunch of work in the area of digital citizenship. But it's this idea that kids aren't coming to us knowledgeable about civil discourse and knowledgeable about, you know, appropriate communication. There's a lot of need for them to, you know, be coached and be taught, you know, and be led in developing these kinds of skills. So, Darren, what do you think?
I think you're echoing some of the things that I'm thinking about as I'm listening to everybody speak. And we started with, I really at the beginning of our conversation wasn't sure about the question or what exactly it was that David was talking about. And I think I'm starting to get a handle on it. Storytelling is a powerful educator. And I think one of the things that David was alluding to in his post was that we need stories of success. Because typically education is slow to change in all the ways that you were just describing, educators are comfortable with what has worked before, and they're comfortable with the ways that they've taught and the ways the kids have learned in their classrooms in the past. And in their view, that has, and rightfully so, that they've been successful with that. So why should we change? Why should I begin to learn begin this steep learning curve into acquiring all this technological knowledge, which is really quite frightening, and begin to teach my class in a totally different way? There's a lot of changes, very fear-inspiring. And in particular, when you move from a control where the teacher is kind of in control of what's happening in the classroom, a lot of the disruptiveness that people describe about these read-write tools, that they're disruptive technologies, is because the teachers aren't in control anymore. Teachers, there's that old catchphrase, moving from sage on the stage to guide on the side. And teachers sometimes can be, it's a little fearful. I know I've experienced that in my classroom, where when I turn things over to the kids, I'm kind of, well, where are they going to go with it?
This is my point, that it's not actually the technology that they're afraid of. It's the fact that they've got to change the way they teach.
It's a change.
But they should have changed the way they taught a long, long time ago.
Yeah, this is Jeff Allen.
Yeah,
go ahead, Darren. Finish.
Go ahead, Wes.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay.
Well, I was just going to say that. So I think I finally got my head around the question, and the way I see it is, what is it about the flat world technology that's impacting teaching? I think it's the stories that we're able to share, the stories of our successes, but perhaps even more importantly, our failures, because we learn from the mistakes that we make. I know that's what I teach my students, and I know that's been my personal experience as well. And the real powerful experience or learning experience that I have by interacting in events like this and others all over the world has been learning not certainly from the successes, but also from the failures, and that can get shared not just with the small group that I'm familiar with in my school or my city or my province or my country, but literally across the world. And so what's happening now is now that impacts education. That impacts learning. When kids are learning, when people are learning from literally across the world, and so by definition, that's also got to impact teaching. And I think what we've got going on now is there's like these little pockets of excellence growing across the world, and the flat world enables those pockets to connect, to create little envelopes. And as those envelopes expand and reach across the world into places that were previously inaccessible, like the typical classroom that's locked in its isolated silo. And I think that's the story.
Jeff, let me invite you to
get off my soapbox.
Oh, that's great. Let me invite Jeff to chime in. And if you'll just give us a quick bio, Jeff, about where you are, what you do, and then you've heard enough, I'm sure, to share some thoughts. So take it away.
Okay, well, great. Well, good afternoon and good evening also, Ian. My name is Jeff Allen. I'm the Director of Educational Technologies at Olympic Educational Service District in Bremerton, Washington. We're just a short ferry ride from Seattle. And we're a regional service district, one of nine ESDs, much like regional organizations in other states. In addition to that, I'm also the president of the Northwest Council for Computer Education. We're an ISTE affiliate here in the States, and just had a great successful conference over in Portland just a few weeks ago. You know, this topic is it's intriguing because I wasn't sure the idea of what the story was, and hearing Wesley's retelling of what Ian was talking about earlier, I'd have to agree. The story is not necessarily technology-based. The story is about teaching and learning and the picture of what's going on in classrooms and schools. You know, we talk about technology as a tool, and if we consider it that way, we have to think about what is the function of that tool. You know, hammers beat on nails and saws cut things. So what does technology as a tool do? And I'm getting more and more convinced that its function is that of an amplifier. And as such, when we bring technology into the classroom, it's going to amplify the good things that are going on in that classroom, or it has the potential of amplifying the bad things that are going on in that classroom. And so really the basis of the story is about instruction and the way that we provide experiences for kids to engage in their learning. You know, a great story, if you've never connected with this group before, Dennis Lichty runs what's called the Big Picture Company. Okay. And it's a number of schools across the country, in particular the MET project in Rhode Island, that focuses on creating learning environments for kids where they're free to dig in and dig deeply into things that are of interest to them. I'm becoming more and more convinced, and I have a couple of teenagers that I freely experiment educationally on, and I'm more and more convinced that what we need to be able to do is provide students opportunities to dig deeply into concepts that are of interest to them and get out of their way. Now, getting out of their way doesn't mean not directing that. It is that guide on the side. And you know, David Warlick has been talking about mashups lately and curriculum mashups. And that idea, can you address when a student is very interested in name the concept, a local community water quality issue, and they want to dig deeply into that and have an impact on that. Can we bring the other standards into their learning along the way and guide them into that? And I believe we can. So when we create a learning environment like that, and then we bring the technology, I don't think the technology becomes disruptive. It becomes an amplifier of the things that the kids are doing and provides them opportunities to dig deeper into things that, okay, that are of interest to them.
Sure.
That's the way we learn. We learn best when we're digging into something that is that's relevant to us, that we can find meaning in. And so providing students the opportunity to do that and to share those experiences with others, that's how technology can amplify that.
I have to jump in, Jeff. I agree with you. A guy by the name of Michael Fallon was, and I apologize to be citing research, but he was talking about that we've seen pockets of innovation, but nothing that could go all over the place. And he was saying that the idea or the problem was not the spread of good ideas, but that we had not replicated conditions for successful change. And I think that really ties into what you were talking about, creating learning environments for kids to dig deep, to be engaged in learning, is that we haven't created those environments. And I wonder what factors in schools prevent or are resistant to creating those kinds of environments.
Ewan, you want to chime in?
No. I don't know if what I'm going to say is be particularly positive or not. I have a horrible feeling that happens every now and then when we get enthusiastic about what we do, that we enter into this echo chamber. And that's the second time this week that someone will have said the word echo chamber. But it's a familiar story. If you're into US politics, you know all about echo chamber with the last of the presidential election. That when we get really enthusiastic about it and people say it's changing the educational world, social software is not changing the educational world at all. It's making a very small dent in it. What is changing the educational world are far bigger things, and it's just going back to what we talked about before, it's things like assessment for learning, formative assessment. And when you talk about that with other educators, it's not an echo chamber. Everyone's on the same wavelength, even if they're not able to implement it because of a lack of skills or knowledge. They know it's a good thing and they know they want to aim towards that. Talk about social software, it's lost, it's over their heads. And David in his post, when he's talking about these new stories, he emphasizes the point that any story we tell has to be short. A short story works best. Now, if a short story works best, why are we having an hour-long Skype cast about it? Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I love that. It's a real thrill being able to talk to you guys, but is there not a point in there that what we're talking about is incredibly complex, but what the complex bit is not to do with the technology. The complex bit is to do with all the teaching in behind that weblog or that podcast or that wiki. And it would be great if we could find some did you know that? So did you know that blogging allows you to do learning logs quicker, faster, and sharing them with everyone in the class?
Exactly, that kind of thing. And that's some of the work that I've been doing here in my region and working with some of the teachers and districts in my region, where we really dig into, instead of implementing technology in the classroom, we talk about implementing effective practice in the classroom. And so we think about what are the ways that students learn mathematics, for example. What are those instructional strategies that the research is indicating to us that are most effective, and the classroom environments that support those things, and what are the technologies that can amplify those things? An example of that is using, it's kind of a localized social network, but the use of digital document cameras. We know the power of students being able to share their understanding of concepts in mathematics and seeing and hearing the understandings of others. And by having a digital document camera in the classroom where a student can place their work under the camera for all students to see and they can engage in a conversation about the mathematics and their understanding, knowledge is built by those conversations.
Yeah, and it's the ability to be able to share so much quicker, isn't it?
Exactly. And so, these social network types of technologies, whether they're localized or globalized, facilitate that discourse. And understanding that the conversations that we have are really what build our knowledge and understanding of concepts. We don't necessarily learn a great deal from reading a book, but we sure learn a lot when we talk to others about it.
Hmm. One thing I noticed about Jeff as well, that was Jeff speaking, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. It's all new voices for me. So, the one thing, reading Jeff's blog and then hearing you speak, it's almost like two different people, because you speak like a real educator about things that really matter in the classroom. And your blog is very much based on hardware, the nuts and bolts, the motherboards and what have you. And I even heard someone behind you talking about servers, I'm sure of it.
I'm in a room with a bunch of network technicians, so...
Yeah. That's all right.
Well, it's okay. We're all geeks together here. But one thing that strikes me is that when you say information communications technology, which in itself is not really an easy mouthful, people do think of the kind of kit that you talk about in your blog, and they see that as another barrier. And what you're talking about is actually down to good teaching, because in the absence of the bit of kit that you've just been talking about, all it would take is for a half-decent teacher to, get the kid to describe what they had written, or get the kid to hold up what they had done, or go and work in groups. But that basic skill is still not happening. I wonder whether we could avoid the echo chamber effect by talking more about things like formative assessment and peer support and peer mentoring than talking about blogs and podcasts, which are really jargon-based. I don't know. Maybe I'm being a little bit too extreme on the other side.
Well, this is Wes. Let me jump in and say something, and then we'll turn to Darren. I think you guys are right and onto something. And in addition to having us talk about, we heard Jeff talk about the amplification, what supports good practice, I think we need to be talking about relationships and connections. And that's where the digital storytelling is powerful, and that's where, technologies like Skype and blog can be powerful too, because I was an exchange student when I was in high school, and I became very convinced that people's perceptions about the world and especially about other people are changed most powerfully when they get into relationships with other people. And I think that's one of the things that's most exciting about Web 2.0 is we're not just, you know, writing stuff for people to read abstractly. I mean, there's real people that are behind these blogs. I mean, we're talking to each other and hearing each other's voices. And so I think that's part of the story, too, is trying to get teachers and administrators to see how when kids get engaged in relationships, they want to be social. I mean, there's no doubt about it. That's what all these social software technologies demonstrate abundantly, and anyone who knows a teenager knows that already. But anyway, I think that's part of it, too. Darren, what would you say?
Well, as I'm listening to everybody talk, I kind of sense there's a growing pattern in all of the comments. There's an underlying issue that's coming up, and basically that we get involved in all these technologies, blogging and podcasting and using wikis and all the other things surrounding all of that. And oftentimes we can lose sight of what the purpose of all of that is. And it was early on in this discussion, as I was listening to what people were saying, it occurred to me like a lot of people were describing how blogging is a transformative technology. Well, why? Why is blogging transformative? What is it about blogging that really changes things? And you've all been alluding to it, each in your own way. Wes, you said it's about the relationships and connections. Jeff, you said that knowledge was built by conversations and how the Read White Web facilitates that. You were saying that social software isn't changing the world, that the complex issues that we're talking about in this podcast and have been in our blogs over the last year and more are about not about the technology, but it's all about teaching and learning and how teaching and learning is being impacted by these technologies. And I think the impact that it's having is on the relationships and the connections that people make, how pumped up a kid gets when someone from halfway across the world comes and leaves them a comment, encouraging them in their learning or asking them a question or showing interest in who they are or what they're about or what's happening in their classroom. I think that's viscerally exciting. I can remember the first time Ann Davis, I had been reading Ann for a little while. This is all the way back when I started, it's more than a year ago I started blogging. I guess that's December 2004. And I remember she wrote a post called, "I love this blog." So I said, "Oh, okay, I wonder what Ann's about." And she, as I'm reading it, she's talking about my class blog. And my eyes, I started to get sweaty palms. I was so happy and so excited and thrilled. And the thought I had after, when that was all over, just a few minutes to reflect on it, was my kids need to feel this. It's important that my students have that sense, that thrill, that sense of excitement. Something that I keep saying over and over and over again in all of my classes is that learning is a conversation. And if all that's happening to you is you're sitting in class and you're listening to your teachers, maybe you're being a quote-unquote good student and you're taking notes. Maybe you're being a great student and you're going home and you're reading your notes and, you know, doing all your homework. Well, if that's all you're doing, you're not really learning. Because if you really want to learn something, you need to begin to have that conversation. Jeff, you were saying that kids learn best when they dig deeper into their learning. That the deeper they get into it, then the better and more that they know. Well, that reminds me of a conversation we've been having around for a little while now about the tension between push learning versus pull learning. That historically, current education has been push. We push information in front of kids saying, learn this because someday you might need it. As opposed to the kids getting excited about something and wanting to pull in all the resources and learn as much as they possibly could about that. I think teachers using the Read-Write Web tools that are available right now can orchestrate students' learning experiences so that they get that kind of excitement where they want to pull in the information. But the way it works is by having access to that global community. See, when a kid's writing something about today, I was proving the sum and difference identity formulas in my grade 12 pre-cal class. Well, my kids were, you know, a lot of it goes over their heads, but when the scribe writes about it tonight, if someone from somewhere around the world leaves them a comment and says, this is interesting, can you explain to me what this is all about? Or how does this work? Or that looks like a really interesting proof. Do you really understand all of that? And if that comment comes from halfway across the world and maybe from more than one place, wow, that kid's going to get really turned on about what they were learning in class that day, because they're going to want to know and be able to explain what happened so that they can reply to this stranger who suddenly showed some passing interest in their learning. That's,
I think,
the transformative effect of blogging, and that's what I think the story is all about.
I think you're spot on in giving us a wonderful conclusion to a program, for an hour-long discussion there. What I find incredible still is how making international connections like this. I mean, I'm a linguist and speak to people in different languages all over the planet through a traditional telephone, but to be able to have a Skype chat with so many people, including Jeff, who I've never met before, but who I now feel best buddies with, and whose entire blog I've managed to read in the last 20 minutes. I've done that. I've got a bigger thrill than I have from speaking French or German or Spanish to someone in, 6,000 miles away. The thing I don't quite get is, and this is maybe next show's topic, is how kids can get a little bit blasé about it all because they're used to it. And while we're trying to G up the teachers and enthuse them about it, sometimes the first reaction they receive when they try it out with their classes is a nonplussed lack of enthusiasm. I'm going to drop that little bombshell. That might give us something to think about for the next 4 weeks, and we can meet back and talk about that. But
absolutely. Well, let's go to Miguel for any summative comments or other thoughts, and then we'll go back to Jeff.
Somebody mentioned earlier that stories have to be short, and I was going to say something about that. Cut this part out, Wes. The part I wanted to talk about really was, what gets me about blogging and podcasting is that I'm producing something and making it available to a worldwide audience, and we have that conversation. That's the same kind of excitement that I feel that students get. And one of the neat things about all the ReadWrite web tools is that we can sort of change them around, work with them, and make them over in our own image in some ways. That's why every blog looks different, although it still has the same elements. We can put our mark on each one of those different tools, and being able to change them, reinvent them, and make them our own is what makes ReadWrite web technology so exciting. And it allows us to sort of share our uniqueness with a broader audience. When we talk to teachers and as classroom teachers, as we share lesson plans with each other and share ideas on how to do things, there's no guarantee that we're going to use those lesson plans that we've received from others in exactly the same way. We're going to remake them and sort of reinvent them. That's what I see happening with blogs. And even, you really touched on that with your bombshell question is maybe teachers are going to be excited, and when they roll this out to kids, the kids might not be as excited because maybe they've been doing it all along. But the whole thing is that we want to be excited about what we're doing in our jobs, in our schools, and if we're caught up in summative assessments rather than formative assessments only, then maybe we aren't as excited about educating. Maybe we're not as excited about as engaging our students and learning new things. And that lack of excitement, I think, just communicates or doesn't communicate an excitement for learning new things to our students. So students start to associate not learning exciting things, or that learning can't be exciting while in school. It can only be exciting when you're out of school. And that's why we'll start to see more MySpace and more whatever, because that's where I really get excited. I mean, I can't do a Skype cast in my school district. I can only do it here at home. And it's a different environment. I was just, when I heard the words proxy server behind you, Jeff, I have to tell you, I'm saying, I bet Jeff might be sitting there with a tie on. And I'm sitting here with just a, floppy collar.
We don't want to know.
Yeah. But the whole point is that where we have these conversations changes the dynamic, and I wish that I was calling from work, because I know that I have a different outlook, a different way of saying things. So it's hard to recreate that in my own home, knowing that my two kids are waiting to get back in the computer room so that they can do some fun stuff.
All right, Jeff, summative comments.
Well, I'm almost embarrassed to admit, yes, I do have a tie on. this has been real fascinating because I've only been blogging for less than a year. Actually, I started my blog as one of the bloggers for last year's NEC conference in Philadelphia, and it's been a growing experience for me. But 99.9% of everything that happens, good or bad, I think is a result of relationships that we have. And it's been real fascinating. Just in the last probably 4 weeks or so, I've kind of discovered David. I've known David for quite a while, but then I discovered Wesley's blog and a few others. And here I am speaking with four other educators that are of like mind and like interest and carry the same kind of passion that I do from all over the world. And we're forming relationships right here. And it's that conversation that we have, and I go back and thinking about the classroom and student writing, for example, and students writing through the use of read-write technologies. When a student writes a paper or responds to a writing prompt, typically they hand that back to the teacher, and the teacher kind of then engages in that discourse with that student about their writing. But through the use of read-write technologies, the students around them can engage in that conversation. And so students become, typically we have a classroom of 30 students, but we only have that one-to-one conversation between the student and the teacher. With this type of technology, we can have a class of 30 students who are all engaged in conversations with each other. That becomes exceptionally powerful as students begin to develop their skills in writing and communicating and sharing their ideas. And so there becomes maybe a basis of the story that, again, it's the conversations that we engage with each other. And this allows us to have bigger, broader conversations with more and more diverse people.
I'll tell you, I'm just kind of picking up on what Jeff was saying. And I think everyone has said that at different points in the afternoon. Or evening, depending on where you are, that really this whole conversation is really about two things. It's about the relationships and connections that people can make one with the other, that these relationships and connections that are facilitated by the Read-Write Web, and that leads to a change in the way kids learn, which requires also a change in the way that teachers teach. And it's really not about the tools that we use so much as it is about stories about how we use those tools.
Good.
And to foster those connections and relationships. Yeah.
Good summary. Well,
thanks.
We will look forward to continuing to keep track of each other, and hopefully we can do this again. I also want to thank the offer that we had from the folks at World Bridges to do a live webcast of this, and we will possibly pursue that option in the future. But thanks very much. In the podcast show notes, we'll include links to everybody's blogs and some of David Warlick's work. And, hey, maybe we can set up a time with David to interact with him about this and get some more definition about what the new story is and, I guess, what each of our roles are in trying to tell that story and invite others to be a part of that story in the 21st century classroom. We'll be right back.